Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour, and today is Wednesday, September 14th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description of the problem in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet, and it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 18 years now to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again, absolutely free. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you choose to tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet. It also contains an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and it contains a copy of the Dragon and Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope people do all of that soon and often because it frequently leads to comments, questions, or testimonials, answers, etc. If you have any of those to share with us, please give us a call at 563-999-3581 and press 1 on your phone, or send us an email. You can email Jeannie at jeannie@whyagain.org. And you can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. And we will take your questions, whether they come through us through the app or through an email, address them on the internet show where appropriate, and then send you a link letting you know what day and time we answered or addressed your questions. And the archive is the way that you would get access to that. The archive is available for the last 11 and a half years of us doing this show. The first 8 years was 1 hour a day, 5 days a week, and the last three and a half have been 2 hours a day, 5 days a week. So there's no lack of material. There's plenty of audio files of shows and examples of people working through the worksheet and people asking questions about how the process works, and we are hopeful that you will take advantage of that. It's a powerful resource. It's available absolutely free, and some of the most relevant shows have been curated out by Jeannie Rice, and that's on the link to, you know, a hot link on the page after you click on Start Here. And then, of course, you can go to the picture of the microphone on that page and go to any show that's happened in the last 11 and a half years. Almost any show. We've had a few that we've lost due to technicalities, but so we are working through the Way of Mastery this year. We are, yesterday we just began Lesson 21, and I prefaced it with how Lesson 21 and Lesson 22 offer us very powerful tools. They're more of a challenge than some of the others. The idea of just picking something up and holding it in your hand and understanding that you don't know anything about this object, where it began, what it's made of, who was the first person who had a thought of it, etc. And the same goes true for your hand or your knee or your foot. You don't know who created you or how or why or when. But these exercises in Lesson 21 and 22 are more actively focused on helping to uncover what are the negative beliefs that you hold in your consciousness that you push away and try not to acknowledge. What are some of the identifications that you cling to which are causing you to say and do things that you later regret doing, or to have a deep love for or a desire to know your Creator more and yet not be willing on a regular basis to step into the use of the tools that would facilitate you toward that goal. So yesterday, as we began Lesson 21, we got introduced to a series of 9 statements, and we were encouraged to use them as mind shifters. The way Dr. Michael Rice defines a mind shifter tool, it's a targeted journaling, I call it, a targeted journaling session that specifies some statement for which or about which I might have negative content in my consciousness, whether you want to call it conscious, subconscious, or unconscious. But the subconscious isn't right there top of mind. And the unconscious, we define that as the stuff I'm actively pushing away and blocking myself from getting access to. So this technique of targeted journaling, or the technique that's outlined in Lesson 21 of the Way of Mastery, is designed to stir up and add energy to and help bring to the surface, to the conscious awareness, those things in my energy system, in my field of thought, in my belief system, which would argue against any of these direct observations that they make in the Way of Mastery. Again, the list of those 9 statements is as follows. Lesson or point number 1, it is not possible for you to be without love. Point number 2, it is not possible for you to be alone. Point number 3, it's not possible for you to taste death. That'll stir some stuff up for people. Point number 4, it's not possible for you to taste genuine loss. Number 5, it's not possible for you to suffer from the dream of separation. Number 6, it's not possible for you to be apart from your Creator. Number 7, it's not possible for you to fail. Number 8, it's not possible for you to harm anyone or anything. Number 9, it's not possible for you to be guilty of sin. And if you'll remember, the way to use that as a tool is to write each of those statements at the top of an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper And then as often as you feel inclined to do so, throughout an entire week, pull it out, read the statement at the top, and write out whatever comes to your mind that wants to argue against that. And then, after a 2 or 3 minute period of writing about it, then take a look at it and see what's come up that wants to try to convince you that this statement is not true. And then look at that belief that you've come up with about how that statement is not true and ask, has this belief or this perception of myself that seems to be in opposition to the statement at the top of the page, has it really changed anything about me? Has it taken my existence from me? Simply see what the answer is. And then lift your eyes from the page and look around and say within your mind, quote, I am free in this moment to choose to see things differently. Then take a minute or two to abide, simply look around you, and then go back to the statement at the top of the page. And some of them are stated in the negative, but they're all statements about how you are safe and you are whole and you have never sinned. And then read it and then say, this is the truth about me and I want only the truth. So where we left off yesterday, we were talking about allowance, and allowance as the doorway to the kingdom, to where we all say we want to be. The heading of this section is titled, Allow All Things. And I'm going to go back and read from the beginning of this section because this is a challenge. This is a major challenge for most of us in the Western world. There are a lot of bad things going on in the world. There are horrible people doing this and that. There are people trying to take other people's rights away. All of that may be true, and yet none of it has ever changed your value. None of it has ever made you more or less worthy of connection, awareness of your connection to your Creator, and the bliss that comes from that conscious awareness. And again, this book is about how each and every one of us is creating our own experience of life moment to moment. It's not about all this stuff happening on the outside that we cannot directly change. It is about the things going on inside of us moment to moment, which we can directly change. So breathing and softening reminds me that one of my favorite quotes from Guy Finley is that there is nothing more practical than true spirituality. So if I'm really concerned about all of this political upheaval and all the violence happening in the world and all of the destruction going on in the environment, my first and most important action is to focus inside myself, reconnect to my true nature, generate that loving feeling, and then start extending that in every interaction with everyone and everything. Because what flows from that is going to be far more corrective, far more powerful, and far more healing than anything I can do with my conscious logical mind. So the section reads, become willing to be one who cultivates the ability to allow all things. The mind that is free can do this. The mind that is imprisoned cannot do this. For the mind that is imprisoned is so because it insists that what it perceives should become different in itself, but that the perceiver does not need to change. And that is the very essence of imprisonment. This is why we talk about Roger McGowan in the book, you know, Messages of Life from Death Row by Pierre Pradervan with Roger McGowan. Here's a guy on death row for 20-some years. And yet, here's a man who within his mind is probably more free than most anybody you'll ever encounter in your life. It's what he chooses to do with his mind energy, with the focus of his attention, with his awareness moment to moment, with his appreciation of and for the gift of life. That's what gives him the freedom that many of us who live out, and we call it, you know, out in society, wild and free, are nowhere near as free as people like Roger McGowan, even if he's confined within a 6 foot by 6 foot by 10 foot prison cell. So the text goes on and says, one who cultivates that ability to allow is cultivating in truth the very act of forgiveness. Because forgiveness is the releasing of the world from an insistence that the mind's perceptions be held as right. It is releasing from itself. The mind that is healed releases from itself the need to hold on to its perceptions. Therefore, allow all things, trust all things, embrace all things, and thereby transcend all things. Allowance follows on the heels of desire. For when you desire the kingdom above all things, you have no choice but to discover that you must allow the world to be as the world is. For you have not known how the world is. You have only known your perceptions of it. And think about it. Every one of us has been in a situation where we were viewing or hearing, or in terms of physical sensations like temperature or impact or being spun around, et cetera, on a carnival ride, we were experiencing something different, even though we were in the presence of the same energies as a whole other group of people. You know, I was giving an example of somebody from last week in the support group. We started a video, and minutes into the video, this person typed in the chat room, I'm already triggered. And there were other people saying, this is great, I love this. We create our own experience. And if we are not aware of that, then we don't become aware of the fact that we haven't really experienced the world. We're only experiencing our own perceptions. So it says, allow all things, trust all things, embrace all things, and thereby transcend all things, because allowance follows on the heels of desire. For when you desire the kingdom above all things, you have no choice but to discover that you must allow the world to be as the world is. Why? Because you don't even know the world as it is. All you know of the world is the pictures your mind has created of it. And as we've talked about, our scientists these days are recognizing that when we create a picture in our mind of an event or a person, 80% of the information that we're using to create that picture comes from our past. It's not coming from the light waves striking the eyes. You have not known how the world is, the text says, for you have only known your perceptions of it. But the comforter will heal those perceptions. What's the comforter? The connection within you to the divine mind. Rukha Dukuja, an elemental force specific for humans that's implanted in each one of us at our creation, that's there to help us break off the effects of the errors in our thought and guide us to truth and happiness if we just ask it to. The comforter will heal your perceptions. In other words, will show you the false nature of your perceptions. Will give you access to what Michael Rice calls the spiritual faculty of true perception, without all the distortions. And all that is required there . The only thing that's required on your part is that little willingness to let your perceptions be changed. As they are changed, the world magically becomes a different place. It becomes transparent and harmless. It becomes virtually valueless, except for the value that the comforter would give it while it lasts. Allowance, beloved friends, is a process of letting go and trusting. It is a process of saying, quote, I wonder what it would be like to just let things be as they are, to notice them and let them pass by, close quotes. Allowance, then, is the doorway through which Christ passes into the complete remembrance of Christ. Allowance brings a deepening sense of freedom. Freedom from all circumstance. For it is your circumstances that you have believed have the power to imprison you. But as you choose to relinquish your perception of the world or any circumstance, you discover that you're already abiding in freedom. The power, and that is what freedom is a power to create differently. And to create is the effect of what you will choose to see. Allowance can be thought of as a resistance being melted from the nervous system. And again, the nervous system is just an aspect of the mind anyway. Allowance is like the opening of the palms of the hands. Instead of holding on so tightly, you simply let go. What do you let go of? You let go of the habit of the need to be right. The habit of the need to perceive the world as a fearful place. The habit of perceiving that you are in lack, letting go of the habit of perceiving that Christ must be far from you. Anything that is unlike the kingdom of heaven is a habit well worth releasing by allowing it to be dissolved from your mind. The essence of this lesson is the cultivation of allowance. It begins with the willingness to relinquish the lid you have placed upon your own mind so that you become able, in innocence, to simply observe how it really is, what is really going on down in the basement, without judgment, without fear, without justification, without explanation. It is simply there. The cultivation of allowance will deepen a great deal if you will merely put the exercise that we began with into practice. In allowance, you cultivate the very quality of forgiveness. Without forgiveness, it is impossible to awaken into the realization of the truth that is true always. Why is that impossible? Because judgment is the opposite of the kingdom. Where forgiveness is withheld, you are literally making a choice to be outside the kingdom. You've used the power of your mind to make a decision out of a desire to hold on to a perception, and thereby you've generated direct experience. You are the one who has kicked yourself out of the garden. From the very first lesson in this book, the very first axiom, you only experience those things you've chosen. You never experience anything from outside of yourself. Forgiveness in this work means the dismantling of this process of perception, especially when anything you do with the process of perception leads you to a negative thought or emotion. Forgiveness has nothing to do with pardoning yourself or someone else. It means only the dismantling of the process of perception. To step into, to ask to be shown, and then step into an understanding of or an experience of what Michael Rice would call the spiritual faculty of true perception. To be able to have, as Yeshua was talking about in an earlier lesson, to have the experience of seeing the shimmering radiance behind or moving through everyone and everything you look at. To see within that shimmering radiance an opportunity for you every moment to choose to teach only love. Oh, you just bumped into somebody in the grocery store because you were looking at your phone instead of where you were going. Or they bumped into you because they were looking at their phone instead of looking where they were going. This is an opportunity to extend loving energy and to teach only love by sharing only loving thoughts. You stubbed your toe. This is an opportunity to teach only love, to extend loving energy to yourself instead of berating yourself for being clumsy. Every moment, oh, I just got a horrible diagnosis. Or I said diagnosis of a very severe physical problem that's going to mean my life is going to be over in a year or two. Oh, this is an opportunity to choose to teach only love. And there's a deep understanding that this book doesn't talk so much directly about, but the deep understanding is that the more I hold on to the negativity, the anger, the fear, I fight for my right to be right and my right to be, you know, in domination over somebody else, the more I create disruption in my energy system. It talks about it in lesson 3 or 4 where it says, if you understood what happens in your body every time you judge, how even the cell and the cell structure in your body does not function well when you are in judgment, you'd never judge again. And the longer we go in that restricted state of impaired cellular functioning, the more we move toward the, what we, these things we call disease states. We start to have symptoms, and the symptoms develop into patterns, and the patterns become disorders, and the disorder becomes a disease. And this is understood. And yet, when most people look at that from the Western mind, they think, oh, now you're going to be shaming people who are sick and you're going to be blaming them for their own illness. And there's nothing about shame or blame or guilt in the words that directly observe how pressure and tension and holding on to wanting to be right and fighting to argue for your negative emotions, how these things literally suppress the immune system. They disrupt the energy flow. Everything is energy. Your body is energy. Your thoughts are energy of a different kind. Everything is energy. When it's flowing and connected, it wants to heal. It wants to be vibrant. It wants to extend itself in creation, in bliss, in joy, whatever word you want to use, when it's connected and flowing. When it's tight or tense or constricted, when somebody is living in their life from the belief that they're separate, they create that life experience for themselves and they disrupt the flow of energy. That has consequences. It's not a shame thing. It's not a blame thing. It's not a guilt thing. It's just an observation. Oh, look what happens when I focus on negative thoughts, when I grit my teeth and I raise my voice and I say, that person has no right to take this other person's rights or to invade that country or do it. And I can feel the tension. And when I feel that tension, when I argue for my limitations, they're mine. When I tense up, when I fight, when I want to argue with people about how I'm right and the world is wrong, I get to create that experience. There is no such thing as someone being able to take from me my freedom to choose what I do with my mind energy. The last line I read was, you are the one who has kicked yourself out of the Garden of Eden, the kingdom of heaven. You have used the power of the mind to make a decision that you're going to hold on to a perception. You're going to hold on to the belief that you're right and the world is wrong. And therefore, you have generated the direct experience of being in pain, of being in fear, of being in sadness, of being separate. The text goes on and then says, remember then that always this process of dismantling your perceptions is essential. The text reads, remember then that always forgiveness is essential. But I'm reminding us here what they've spent an entire lesson three talking about. What they mean by that word of forgiveness is the dismantling of your perceptions and owning that you're the one creating your perception. And in that process, you dismantle the process, the action of projection. So you quit projecting your negative perceptions onto your mind's images of someone else. And every time you do that, you take yourself deeper and deeper into the purity of your own consciousness. You get to see more accurately yourself and the true nature of you and everyone and everything around you. So remember then that always dismantling your negative perceptions is essential. It is necessary for the atonement, the at-one-ment. Forgiveness is another word for allowance. We speak here not of a blind passivity, but of a relinquishment within one's mind, and that is all. It is a willingness to see the complete neutrality of all events. It is a willingness to let the comforter remind you that separation does not exist, and you cannot possibly make yourself guilty of sin and all the rest. It can't happen. You can create the experience of it, but it doesn't change your true nature. There's that line from Rudyard Kipling's book, If you can meet with triumph and disaster and treat those two imposters just the same. It's like a line I have in another of my exercises for patients that says, my successes and my failures in any area do not increase or decrease my value as a person. So remember, forgiveness is always essential. It's necessary for the atonement. Forgiveness is another word for allowance. We speak here not of blind passivity, but of a relinquishment within one's mind, and that is all. It's a willingness to see the complete neutrality of all events. It's a willingness to let the comforter remind you that separation does not exist and that you cannot possibly make yourself guilty of sin and all the rest. Forgiveness is a relinquishment of what you have decided is true about the world. Forgiveness means to relinquish, to dismantle the projections, the decisions, the judgments you have made about the world. It is then very much a self-centered practice. Of yourself, you cannot forgive your brother or sister for anything because in reality, they have done nothing to you. You cannot forgive your brother or sister of anything because they have done nothing to you. We could read that line over and over and over again to good effect. This is exactly what Dr. Michael Rice found in the Kabor's manuscript. It's exactly what he found in the Course in Miracles as a definition. Has nothing to do with forgiving anyone for anything. It's about dismantling your perceptions. especially when they lead to a negative emotion or a negative thought. The text goes on and says, allowance is like the petals of a flower opening to embrace the new dawn of a spring day. Allowance is like the melting of the ice that allows the river to flow. Allowance is like the removing of a cap from a bottle of sweet fragrance and enjoying it as deeply as you can. Allowance is the dissolution of fear. Allowance is transformation. When you have come to allow all things, to trust all things, when you have embraced all things, you will transcend all things. Only that one who is larger than the thing that is embraced can do the embracing. Therefore, whenever you feel imprisoned, it's because you've made yourself feel or experience yourself as being smaller than the world you perceive. Guy Finley says, fear is always the byproduct of two false perceptions. The first one is that you are smaller than the situation, the person, or the event that's facing you. And that's false. It's a false perception. Your essence is not smaller than anything. Your consciousness, your life expressing. So the first false perception that gives rise to fear is that you are smaller than the person or situation that's in front of you. The next false belief that gives rise to fear is that this person or situation in front of you has the ability to take something from you that you need or prevent you from getting something that you need. Both of these are false. And without those two false perceptions, false beliefs, it's not possible to generate fear. That's from Guy Finley. That's one of his talks. You have to have these two false beliefs active in order to generate fear. When you have come to allow all things, to trust all things, then you will have embraced all things. Only one who is larger than the thing that is embraced can do the embracing. You must step into the awareness that you are part of the Christ mind. You are part of the one mind. The world that you see is coming into being, into awareness inside you, inside your awareness. If you don't have awareness of it, it may as well not exist for you. Therefore, whenever you feel imprisoned, it's because you have created the belief that you are smaller than the world you perceive. The text goes on and says, and when you feel free, it's because you have remembered that you are the one from which all things have arisen. You are the offspring of the Creator. You are the vast sky. I am gotten distracted here because something popped up in the dashboard for Blog Talk. And I just wanted to make sure that it was something I didn't need to pay attention to right now in order to continue the session today. So, the text reads, and when you feel free, it is because you have remembered that you are the one from which all things have arisen. You are consciousness. You are the offspring of creation. You are the vast sky in which all clouds and storms arise and pass away. While the sky remains completely unscathed, the sky is eternally changeless. Once you realize that, that is freedom. And the cultivation of freedom is a free will choice. It is the result of desire for the kingdom. As you come to truly forgive yourself, meaning you remove every perception you've ever held about anyone or anything, you will come to discover that it means relinquishing the perceptions of yourself as well. You are not your thoughts about yourself. You are not just the body. You are not the effect of the consequences of any choice you've made in the past. As you come to truly forgive yourself and dismantle every perception you've ever held about anyone or anything, you will come to discover that it means relinquishing these perceptions about yourself, dismantling negative perceptions about yourself. Ultimately, you cannot awaken fully unless you include yourself in the circle of your forgiveness. In other words, in the process of dismantling every perception about yourself, just as you would want to dismantle every perception, especially the negative perceptions you have about anyone or anything. Ultimately, of course, you come to see that the very practice of allowance is really the act of allowing yourself to be, truly be, the capital S self that you are, whole and complete, infinitely safe, constant as a northern star. You will no longer resist the process of purification by whatever means the comforter or your inner wisdom uses for you. It simply does not matter anymore. They offer this quote, "Why resist it? All I want is creation. All I want is that constant awareness of my connection to my source." The text reads, "If it is dissolved in the mind in a split second, and you do not even notice it, fine. And if it requires great tears and great experiences in the world, that's fine too. What is the difference? They're really the same. It's because you have relinquished, through allowing, the ownership of your pathway home. You've decided to let the comforter take you home. You've decided to let life unfold on life's terms and choose love and choose to teach only love through that process, however it might unfold in the external world. Because you desire the kingdom above all else, it no longer matters how that process is experienced. You no longer complain that it seems to be taking too long. You simply enjoin yourself in the process itself. You settle back into the flow of life. You sit back as the witness of life unfolding. You choose each moment to be viewed by you as an opportunity to extend love." The text says, "You let the comforter take you by the hand and retrace the steps that you once made in error." One of the lines, either from a darshan or this book or a Q&A session, is, "Every moment of my life brings me to a place where when I get triggered, I could use that as the awareness that I now have an opportunity to bring a new presence to energies which once defeated me. It's a choice. Whenever I get upset, whenever I get triggered to upset, whenever I choose an upset or a negative thought or emotion, I could choose to say, ah, this is an opportunity for me to bring a new presence to energies which once seemed to defeat me." You let the comforter take you by the hand, the text says, and help retrace the steps you once made in error. Each step requires allowance. Each step is forgiveness born of desire that has been purified, of desire for that which imprisons you. So it's a little bit of doublespeak here. It says the actual energy of creation as this flow through me is the word desire. And then I have created these things that I crave and I have obsessive attraction to. But when I let the act of dismantling false perceptions and I let myself tune into that energy of creation that wants to express uniquely through me, it will purify me of those cravings that used to imprison me. And then that is replaced with a desire for that which will set all things free, which will allow all things, trust all things, embrace all things, and thereby transcend all things. The text goes on and says, once your desire begins and comes and becomes the kingdom, it begins in and becomes the kingdom, the end of your journey is perfectly certain. School's out. That which the ego is can no longer last. For the very universe, creation, the world around you, will conspire, which means to breathe together. All of these things will breathe together under the hand of the Holy Spirit to create precisely what is required for you to be set completely free of all illusion. And secretly, you will have already agreed with the Comforter that it will be this way. Allowance, then, is equally as important as desire and is an aspect of that pathway, that foundation, whereby Christ remembers Christ and arises from the ego's ashes to walk upon this plane and any plane as the truth that is true always. Remember that it is only the ego that will compare and contrast. It is only the egoic mind that thinks about another person's path and wonders if perhaps their path is better than your own path. There is only the life that you are experiencing directly. And through desire and allowance, that very life comes to be embraced as the very means by which the Comforter is dissolving illusion from your mind. Of course, it is all based on the humility of realizing that the ego cannot awaken itself, that the Comforter is that agency given by grace that knows how to bring you home. I've had a variety of people over the years talk to me about when they read these books and they talk about the ego and they think that this reading or that reading or this teacher or that teacher talks about the ego as evil and bad and wrong. And essentially, the things that cut across all these great spiritual teachings that make the most sense to me are the ones that say, look, the ego is like the conscious logical mind. It's a very simple tool. It's part of navigating through life on this planet. It's not a bad thing. It's not a wrong thing. It's like any other tool. It's a very simple tool, like a hammer or a saw. It can be put to very good use. It can also produce some rather unpleasant results when it's used inappropriately, or it's used indiscriminately, or it's used exclusively. I remember one point in the darshans, and we were talking, JM was talking about the darshans of this work are these online classes that JM did from, I think, 2011 to 2014, where he broke these down lesson by lesson, word by word sometimes. And he was talking about how you cannot dismantle your ego for the simple reason that the part of you that thinks it wants to dismantle your ego is the ego. The goal is to understand the ego. The goal is to embrace and allow this acceptance thing that we just finished reading about, because the ego, the egoic mind, is part of the flow of life. So the goal is to understand it deeply, to understand that the ego is not you. The ego is just a collection of thoughts about you. And you are not your thoughts about yourself. You are not just the body. And the word is never the thing. And yet many people are struggling because their identification with the ego is so intense that it's creating great disruption in their lives. And so what's recommended in those cases is that people use tools, use processes, use direct observation. And as you step into a purification process, like what is being offered in Lesson 21, which is essentially the mind shifter tool of targeted journaling, you begin to uncover and dismantle the hidden parts of your mind that would block you from seeing the true nature of your ego as simply a very useful and very limited tool. As you understand it, as you allow it, accept it, embrace it, it loses its power to be a disruptive force in your life. You establish a relationship to it which is proper. Albert Einstein said, "We were given a precious gift, which is this intuitive mind, and we were given a faithful servant, which is the conscious logical mind." We have a problem in our culture. We live in a culture which has forgotten the precious gift of the intuitive mind and creativity, connection to your source, and even worse, we have elevated the faithful servant to the level of master. So we think we have to think our way out of every problem. We think we are our thoughts. We think we have to defeat the ego. And it can never happen because it's a self-referential process. The part of me that thinks about dismantling my ego is my ego. It reminds me of a time when I was at Heartland and I'd had some experiences the night before with people arguing about who has the bigger ego and who has the smaller ego, and I had some dreams, and I woke up in the morning and I went to the Heart Center and I had this full-blown image that we were in the Heart Center and one of the buildings nearby, a ruckus broke out. And Jeannie was in the Heart Center with us in this dream or in this image I had. And everybody went to the window and said, "What's going on over there? Should we go help?" And Jeannie calmed us all down and said, "No, no, no, don't worry about a thing. That's just, when the mail came yesterday, it had one of those new machines that measures ego. And they're just having a discussion over there about whose ego is smaller." But, you know, windows were breaking and screaming was happening and stuff was flying. And I just laughed out loud at that image. This is us. We all want to prove that we have a smaller ego. Well, what part of me wants to be the one who can prove that he has a smaller ego than somebody else? Is my ego. What part of me would want to make my ego smaller? My ego. It can't happen. That's why surrender, allowance, and this process of forgiveness, which means to dismantle my negative perceptions about myself and others, is so essential to moving forward. As a whole, as this being of awareness that has an ego, that understands the role of the ego, I'm not beating myself up for having an ego or trying to beat my ego up or beat it into submission. If you haven't read Siddhartha, you should, not should, but you could reread that story. Because it's all about those people that deprive themselves and, you know, did self-flagellation and almost starved themselves to death. And they were just as crazy as the ones who were, you know, hoarding food in abundance and having orgies and always drunk. And it's an insanity to go to one extreme or another, to assume that you can be egoless is the ego trying to be better than someone or something else or some idealized image that it's created. That's why this book and the reading that we finished today is talking about allowance is so important. we have this life experience, and our ego, our training with language and culture and family patterns is a part of that experience. And if we can't allow it, observe it, accept it, trust it, and embrace it, then we can't work with it, and we can't transcend it. So, that's our offering for today. We've got about 3 or 4 minutes left. If anybody has any questions or comments, the call-in number is 563-999-3581. We had our support group last night. We had 6 people plus me. We have our support group tomorrow. These are free. All the information you would need to log in is at mindshiftersacademy.org website. It happened again yesterday, so I will let people know that there are 2 separate pages. There's a separate login ID for Tuesday and a separate login ID for Thursday. And somebody tried to log into our group last night using Thursday's login, and it didn't work. So we invite you to join us or pass this information along to someone you think might benefit or be interested. And please let them know that it's mindshiftersacademy.org. And there are 2 separate pages, one for the Tuesday login information, one for the Thursday login information. Attendance is free. We will accept donations if people feel so inclined, but we've never turned anybody away for money, for lack of money. And it's a wonderful way to get either a better understanding of the core tools of this work and or the underlying dynamics that make it so powerful. Area code 541, you're in the air.
Yes, Celinda. I messed up. I was the one that used the wrong code, but I got back into the right one. Anyway,
well, good.
I figured it out. Used my conscious brain for something intelligent like it's supposed to. The part you said something about the part of me thinking that my ego can dismantle itself or beat it into submission. And when you said beat it into submission, I thought of control issues, because that's what the ego is all about, control. I thought that was interesting, control of self or control of other or control of a situation. So I thought I'd just share that.
Yep, that fits. And of course, I, or anybody else who feels like they need to control something is coming from fear. And that means they're coming from a false thought or false perception. Because in truth,
and out of control already. Yeah. Go ahead.
But they're not out of control, they're just creating the belief that they are. They're creating the experience of being out of control. They're creating the experience that they are weak and vulnerable, that they can somehow be hurt. And it's not a possibility. These teachings are about how your true nature is whole and complete just as it is, and it can't ever be chipped, dented, rusted, faded, or broken in any way. You are absolutely, eternally safe as an essence. That's the core of this work. So if you've created a sense that you need to control something, you're operating from a false thought or belief, a false set of premises.
Or even if I think I'm out of control, it's a false set of premises.
That would have to be true, because this teaching is telling us you have the choice in each new present moment, the infinite capacity to choose the focus of your conscious awareness. So thank you for helping us expire the time with your call here in the last minute or two. I'll mute you so you can listen in. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff that we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. I'll welcome Jeannie Rice, or invite you to call back in, because I am not hearing the clicking sound.
Okay. I'll do that when Michael gets on. I'll hang up and dial back in. So, yeah, it's really weird. It and I ask blog talk about it, and they gave several things, you know, to check. But several people yesterday said they could hear it, and it happens like every 20 seconds. It's just like a click, and then about 20 seconds later, it goes again. So it's just really strange. But okay.
So have you listened back to a show to find out if it's in the recording?
I need to do that. No, I haven't yet.
Okay. Well, have a wonderful show. Blessings.
Thank you. Blessings. Bye. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Wednesday, September the 14th, 2022, and our call-in number is 563-999-3581, and press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. And I'm hearing an alarm go off in this other room, so I'm going to come in here and turn it off. And I think I just heard Michael, so I'm going to welcome Michael.
I'm here.
So welcome.
I had to replace my phone, and I need to go into the old one. We're still fooling with the technology of getting all my data ordered the new phone. And need to go shut the alarms off so I don't have to handle two phones every day. So welcome. Glad you're here. Send me energy. I'm exhausted physically. Been out in the garden since about 6:30 this morning, just rocking full speed to get winter cover crop in. Discovered an awesome source of soil when we originally started building soil in our second garden. We put some stepping stones down, three rows of stepping stones. And underneath that were leaves and grasses and compost and all that sort of stuff. So I started picking up those stones today and found that we had about under, 20 feet by a foot, four times, about 6 inches of just beautiful black soil underneath the stone. So been digging those stones out, replacing the soil with cardboard, which is part of what was in there when we did that last year. And then putting a cover crop on. We had our first cover crop on garden 3, which was about, probably 10 inches high, buckwheat. Cut that all down and replaced it with a mix of about 8 or 9 different seeds that will go over the winter, grow throughout the winter, and open up the soil and fertilize it and get it ready, fix nitrogen in the soil. And so we're learning lots about gardening, but anybody who's ever thought farmers don't work, oh, my God, I can't imagine what a real farm would look like. We got these little piddly gardens we're working on. Anyway, it's a good workout. Good to get into the smell of the soil and the energy of the soil and the plants. And that's just a wonderful learning experience. After all the years of being on the other end of food, you know, for those that might not know it, way, way early in my career, I was in the food business. You know, on a Friday or Saturday night, I had a chef who had trained me, and I could get behind the grill. We had a steakhouse where we specialized in prime rib and steak and lobster. And I could handle a dinner crowd of about 200 people, handling the food prep for that. And so now, instead of, you know, of course, with Heartland, we do total fresh and raw food, the dietary regimen. And we've grown food at Heartland, but I never got my hands in the soil. So this is really a sweet completion of a cycle that we're getting to put our hands in the soil and really be with the energy. It's interesting, the different smells of the soil, different compost, different, you know, we've got different compost places where we're composting food, and worms and soldier flies that are doing composting. So lots of learning, lots of fun. So physically, I'm on I could actually just close my eyes and rest for 2 hours, but we're here to talk about forgiveness. So how can we support you? What's on your mind? What can we share with you about forgiveness? What can you share with us about forgiveness? What questions do you have? What experiences do you have to share? Is there some direction where recognizing that forgiveness is about changing the content of your mind and has nothing to do with letting other people off the hook? So, you know, whenever somebody says to me, oh, I've already forgiven, you know, my mother, my father, my sister, my aunt, my uncle, my former spouse, I've even forgiven my future spouses. What I know is that person's done no forgiveness work today. If you're still talking about how you forgave them or yourself, that's Greek pardoning, nothing to do with the forgiveness conversation. And so we want to reestablish a true, accurate, and meaningful forgiveness conversation. How do you get at, how do you clean out the hidden unconscious parts of your own mind? How do you delete content that's based in hostility or fear that is not based in human life? And in essence, that's what 2,000 years ago, this man Yeshua gave us, was the technology of how to change the content of your mind, how to really, truly heal. They didn't call him the great physician because he had some kind of religious mumbo-jumbo or doctrine to share. He had real where-you-live-in-the-world tools. And so we're looking to understand that removing, addressing, and removing content based in hostility or fear is how to be relieved of that hostility and fear, and to move through the forgiveness process, which is monumental. And of course, having a foundation with which to understand that. You know, we've talked about the idea of the human mind being an evidential device, and the only evidence it gives you is the permission, is the evidence your mind gives you, pardon me, that you give your mind permission to show you. If your mind's not given permission to show you the truth, it can't show you the truth. It cannot inject truth into the constructs that it makes and develops. Now, there's an interesting experiment that was done with cats in the laboratory. And what they did is they wired an oscilloscope into a cat's brain, literally had electrodes where an oscilloscope, which is a device, you've seen them on TV when they go into a lab, and you see it usually as a green tinted screen, and there's a little blip, kind of like a heart monitor. That's a form of oscilloscope. It's literally reflecting the movement of electrical waves. So what they did with the cat is they put an oscilloscope, they wired an oscilloscope into its brain, and they're measuring, you know, activity of the brain. They have a little device that makes a clicking sound, and they put that device in the cat's ear, and they click the device. And each time they click the device, blip, the oscilloscope shows, traces the signal out. Sound enters the brain. Then they put a mouse in a bell jar in front of the cat. And guess what? They could click that clicker till the cows came home, and nothing registered in the brain of the cat. So the information that does not fit the goals that are important to us at the moment is gated out. It's removed. You know, Einstein addressed that when he said the theory you have about a thing determines what you can observe. As creators, what we hide from ourselves becomes our most powerful creative impulse, because when we hide it, we energize it. You know, to put a lid on it is to give attention and energy to it. So information that is denied is hidden. We dissociate from that information. And if that information is resonated by something in the actuality, as it starts to move, it will be massaged by the mind into a different format. You know, you might remember, if you ever had little ones, it was a stage where you got them a little, it was usually made of wood or maybe plastic, and there were several different shaped blocks and several different shape openings in the device. And the round block would only go through the round hole. The triangular one would only go through the triangular one. The square one would only go through the square. The heart would only go. the only block that would fit through was that which matched the shape of the opening. Well, when you think of this Harvard research that we've talked about so many times, where they proved that in a time frame where 10,000 brain cells are firing, the max amount of data that goes into conscious awareness is 9 bits of data. It's kind of like you almost imagine one of those kids' toys with 9 openings. And those 9 openings are preconceived ideas, or in our analogy, shapes. And, you know, where the blocks in the kid's toy are solid wood, so they don't massage, they don't change shape very easily, so you can't get them to go through a hole, but it doesn't fit. With the mind, when things that we've dissociated from, that we've said to the mind, you are not allowed to look at this, you're not allowed to show me this, then when it comes through those 9 slots, so to speak, that bring things into conscious awareness, they're reshaped. They look different. We do not see them in their original form. The mind can only show us a reality that matches what's going on inside of me. And it may not match in any way, shape, or form what's actually happening in the world. And this process of generating realities is by and large controlled by goals and prejudices. Our, you know, why is this happening to me again experiences are evidence that the mind is using the same data to produce an experience, and in different circumstances with different openings, so to speak, in the mind, different available spaces for awareness, the shape of the information, using our analogy of the blocks, is changed. Same information, different circumstance, different evidence. And if we live, you know, the people who talk about their fear of a universal religion, we have had for thousands of years a totally and completely universal religion. And it's actually one that's practiced in many churches as well. It's called the religion of blame. And as long as we live in the religion of blame, then the evidence, the information that our mind is allowed to show us has to conform to our belief that somebody else is to blame for what's going on inside of us. And so we massage information, change its shape, and literally change the world we see to match the blame game that we've been aroused in. And so what happens is we project what's going on inside of us. We literally take the content of our own mind and we massage it into a shape, so to speak, that makes it look like it's the fault or the responsibility of somebody outside of us. So that's the basic tenet of the religion of blame. Somebody else is at fault for what's happening in my life. And it doesn't matter how plain it is that I've been through this 87 different times, so 42 different people, and I'm the only one that was there every time, it's about me. Doesn't matter how plain that is, the mind will not show it to us. The mind will tend to place meanings it holds from past events into its brain's image of the present and future events as well. So people live in a mind that continuously replicates the past. Living in that state was called the dead who buried the dead and the blind who lead the blind. There's an example that I use in the book where I have what people would call the picture of a house. And, of course, I ask the character in the book, you know, what is that? And he looks, he says, it's a house. Well, actually, it's not a house. It's lines on a board. It's what we call a picture of a house, and the only reason we call those lines on the board a house is because we have brain cells for house. And so in order to have to be able to recognize, to cognize once again anything, we've got to have brain cells for it. And when brain cells fire, they literally formulate the picture world that we see in our minds. And that process is called projection. Now, the culture teaches that projection is when I take something that's inside of me and I put it outside of me. That's not projection, externalization. Projection is the image-making capability of my mind. When I make pictures of the content of my mind, I'm projecting the content of my brain cell structure into the picture world that I see. And most people who live in that religion of blame always see how the problem's outside of them. And then that internally generated image is externalized. And of course, that makes it easy for us to ascribe cause to everything happening outside of us. Something in the outside world, and that leads to the perpetual victim cycle that so many live in. You know, just take a look in the political world today, and there's certain people who every time you turn around, their whole conversation is about, oh, look what they did to me. I am the victim. I mean, I'm talking about people with money and power and all kinds of things, but they're the perpetual, everything in their lives is about victimhood. And then if you look at the rage, they destroy people's lives, but they project that they're the victims. So the realities generated by a mind always tell more about the content of that mind than the world that we think we're looking at. And if there's pain involved in perception, it's a reflection of an internal condition of disease. So the mind is a prism through which we see life, and if there's any distortion, then our perceptual constructs about life will be distorted. And forgiveness is about cleaning that up. When I heal denial, when I boldly step forward and accept responsibility, then I can start to move into a healing state. I can start to remove those energetic patterns, which may be many, many, many generations old in my bloodline. Most people, instead of doing that, try to change others. And as they do that, they build more stress inside themselves, which is what indicates that there are parts of the mind that are in need of healing. So that cycle of denial, because of something outside of me, is the cause of what's moving inside of me. That denial leads to dissociation. Dissociation adds energy to what I've dissociated from. So the energy moving as a result of that energy in me sets up literally an energy wave that draws somebody in to play that out with me. And when they do, then I'll project that content into my brain's image of them, and then I'll pretend that what is I'm seeing is coming, is being caused from the outside. So we have this cycle of denial, dissociation, projection, externalization, and that has people engaging in the desire, you know, fulfilling the desire to hide what we don't want to deal with. And that hiding, when we do that, when we do this process through denial, we hide it in the only place that guarantees we'll get to experience it again, within our own minds. And of course, our minds are in our own bodies. And when we hide dis-ease energies within tissue, we create dis-ease. Now, every communication starts out with, you made me. It's based in a lie, and it's pure projection. And, you know, the burden of carrying that kind of projection, that'll wipe out anybody. That people will find it difficult to live. So when we don't honor truth, when we live in a state of blockage of truth, then we live in the belief that everybody else is the problem. And then comes the belief, if we could just change them, then all our pain would go away. Then everything would be okay. All healing is a result of realizing that it's an inside job, and what we seem to dislike about another, that, you know, that which disturbs us about another, is really something inside of ourselves. It's all done with smoke and mirrors. It's all projection. And what true first century Aramaic forgiveness is about is removing the disturbing internal realities that we project into our brain's image of others. But as long as we don't want to own it, then we play the game. We live in the world of blockage truth, not honoring truth. We pretend that our lives are the responsibility of others, and that you have nothing to do with creating the painful emotions or repetitious conflicts in your life. Jeannie got an interesting letter from someone about the book, showed up on the website. And Jeannie, would you just share a little bit about that that letter and
sure.
how this gentleman portrayed the projection game? I think it's a really good,
yeah.
you know, like case study.
So just as a synopsis, he started out saying that the "why is this happening to me again" is nothing more than Jack Nicholson's famous "you can't handle the truth." And he goes on and gives examples of where he has stood up for situations at work that were incorrect or that were wrong, and that he's the one that got the rough end of it for tattling, I guess, on someone else. And that in his world, he saw that 99.99999% of people were bad. And only a very small amount of people didn't care about anything else except the truth, and that maybe the book should be titled, Why Am I Not Telling the Truth? And so anyway, I wrote back.
Myself would be the subtitle.
So I wrote back and I said, handling the truth means looking inside and accepting that we all have a part in our creation of life. If we don't pick up our cross, because he referred to that Jesus and God and the Holy Spirit were the only truth. And I said, if we don't pick up our cross, not Jesus's cross, and let go of the past, then we're doomed to repeat it. And then you would ask the question, why again? And I would offer that everyone is made in the image and likeness of God, who is love. We all have that love still, regardless of our mistakes. There are no bad people. There's just some lost ones. And God loves all of his creation. So don't place yourself above the Creator in that respect and put others down thinking that they don't want truth. Everyone is on a different path. The book is an instruction for those who do want to find a way out of the repeat and do things differently. And it explains why it repeats. Congrats if you have arrived. I've never met a perfect person. Even Jesus said, why do you call me perfect? You might want to consider that your truth holds a little bit of denial, too. I know a lot of people who are on the right path towards being love for themselves and others. We are not perfect, but we are truth seekers, and we know that the Creator loves us all, even in our imperfection. And he wrote back and said, every job I've always worked, I've always stood alone when I reported a calamity. I really can't understand why people always act like sheep and always choose their own life and drop a good colleague. It happened to me too many times to still believe that there's goodness in people. So I wrote back and I said, you say it happened too many times to you. If it happened 87 times with 42 people, you're the only one there every time. It is about you. When you change that in you that perhaps feels people are sheep and no good, then your world will change. We draw in through resonance that which we need to show us what we need to heal. It's always an inside job. Sounds like you are in a storm, and it's up to you where you put your focus, whether you walk, water, or sink. The storm may or may not change, but your internal peace will change as well as your perception of the storm. We have a radio show if you want to call in and talk to us. And I gave him the phone number and everything. But he's actually from, I'm not sure what the abbreviation on the email is, .nl. So I don't know if that's New Zealand or what that is.
And so, L is in Larry?
N is in Nancy, L is in Larry. I'm not sure, you know, like ours is like .com or .us or whatever. Let me do a Google search real quick. But so I'm not sure what his time zone is. A .nl domain name is Netherlands.
Ah, okay. That's probably somebody that's been in the book study club.
Yeah,
they've
maybe.
Got a lot of, you know, Yinka's got a lot of folks that are in different parts of the world with her book study club. So, well,
right.
That means he's listened probably to the book club session. So hopefully that'll help him build some brain cells, because, you know, where we're at right now, as people play this game of everybody else is responsible with the pain happening in me and the repeating conflicts. Telling ourselves it's outside of us is like the way to be disempowered and hide the truth. And when we hide the truth and live in this state of blockage truth, then relationships are killed. Relationships don't die, but are killed by unconscious influences that are beneath awareness, something that's out of awareness. You know, family patterns, parental messages, blame, projection, all behavior patterns, blockage of truth, and, of course, false forgiveness all play their part. And so it's time to, I think, quit this religion of blame and step into an actual adult religion, quote, unquote, where one is responsible for their own lives and pursues the work that the masters who had accomplished the work or were in the process of accomplishing the work told us was possible. And this idea that's been popularized of you're going to be forgiven or you've been forgiven or are you forgiven? No, you never will be forgiven, because forgiveness isn't about letting you off the hook. Forgiveness is about removing the content from your mind that is corrupt data, the content that's based in hostility and fear. So when somebody's made an error that they feel they need to be let off the hook for, you know, that let off the hook for that behavior, that process is called pardoning. And so it can be a very appropriate thing to pardon someone, let them off the hook for something they've done, even if it's, you know, out of line. But then calling that accurately what it is, pardoning, then you go, and now I have forgiveness work to do. I have to delve inside myself and find the root of my pain and remove it. So forgiveness is designed to change one's internal reality structure, and pardoning just doesn't produce that result. Those who live in the game of pardoning, it can be beneficial. I mean, you can disconnect a certain, you know, painful experience from your mind's image of a particular person. But that doesn't heal the invisible blockages and the painful realities that remain beneath the surface in the mind of those who practice pardoning, thinking they're forgiving. Actual forgiveness removes those blockages and those painful realities. That's what it's designed for. Now, probably the biggest atrocity that's been done to us as human beings down through the ages and that we bought into is that we've had hidden from us the fact that we are by nature creators. And of course, everybody loves the idea of being a creator when their creation is going well, but when it's not, that's when the religion of blame takes over. Just listen the next time you sit in a church and hear how much of the conversation is about blame. The truth is, we create the results that happen in our lives, and if we've been through a particular painful result, you know, 87 different times with 42 different people, sooner or later I have to recognize I'm the one that was there every time. Denial, projection, externalization, and holding one's breath don't keep the truth hidden. That's when people turn to and look for drugs, something stronger to create this dissociated state where one can hide from oneself the truth of what they're doing to themselves. So drugs are the way to anesthetize pain that otherwise I can't get rid of. The alternative to that is forgiveness, is to put the pen to the paper, step into the forgiveness process, and address the underlying unconscious dynamic. Now, people use all kinds of defenses in order to shield themselves from the unconscious dynamics of their lives, and by doing so, they exacerbate the disease processes they're engaged in. By giving it attention without resolution, it strengthens the energy of the dis-ease. Letting go of drugs and of all types. I'm talking like sugar, caffeine, rage, letting go of all drugs, and engaging in the process of true forgiveness, that's when one finds real healing. And there's nowhere I know that you'll find a clear, concise understanding of that process besides the ancient Aramaic language. And recognizing that and realizing that if you have a meaning for something that is painful, you're holding an energy that doesn't belong in you, because no event can cause pain. Events can certainly show us the pain we carry, but they are no cause. So your mind, your past, has a meaning for everything you experience. Some of those meanings are accurate, some of them are not. The most important mistaken meaning that virtually everybody on the planet carries, and this is the one that prevents them from cleaning up the root of the way they create their lives, is an incorrect understanding of forgiveness. If every person on the planet had the understanding that pain is an internally generated result of a cause that can be removed, and people engaged in that process, who would there be to blame? The blame game would be over. But when one generates a construct which is painful, that energy that's internal is hidden when one denies responsibility for that construct. And they're the ones that live in the religion of blame. Now, if you live in that false religion, then of course it's only natural that you believe that forgiveness is about letting somebody else off the hook for the pain that shows up again and again in your perceptual constructs. Now, nothing could be further from the truth. Ancient wisdom, based in the Aramaic language, tells us that forgiveness is a tool with which you collapse perception based in blame, fear, and hostility, bring love present to your mind, and remove, by transmuting that pain, the content that's at the root of the repeated experience. You know, the why is this happening to me again experience. An incorrect understanding of forgiveness leads many people to think that, you know, that forgiveness is something to resent. Many people you talk about, oh, that doesn't work, and they've tied resentment to the whole idea of forgiveness. And until that forgiveness is, resentment is forgiven, and that kind of seems like an oxymoron. I resent forgiveness, and I need to forgive the resentment that I have, kind of leaves people in a tough place. Done. The deeper dissociated issues in the mind can't be addressed and healing can't happen. And one of the biggest blocks to healing is the association of forgiveness with religion, which many people have been given, you know, all kinds of false ideas about. Forgiveness is a technology that is a scientific approach to healing the mind, and many, having seen the hypocrisy of imperfect human beings, reject forgiveness on the basis that it's a religious idea. Yes, many religions address the idea of forgiveness, but it's got nothing to do with religion. So this work is about restoring forgiveness as a technology to the whole of humanity. And many people have much work to do to come back. Well, hi there, little mouse. I just had a little girl named Ari Ring come in and jump on me when I wasn't looking. You think that's funny, do you? Hmm? That's funny? Hmm? Squishy. Yeah, it's a soft microphone cover. It helps me. It helps my voice to sound better when I speak on the radio show, yes.
There's a frog in your throat.
There is no frog. Does it sound like there's a frog in my throat? No. There it isn't. Oh, that little lump? That one there? Oh, that's called my Adam's apple. What are you going to pretend it's a frog? Croak, croak, croak. It's being quiet. So thank you for your visit, Ribbit, little frog.
Be quiet.
Well, I'm doing the radio show, so I can't be quiet for now. But
the frog.
She wants the frog to be quiet. So this works about restoring forgiveness. And just most people have a whole lot of work to do to come back into a friendly relationship with actual forgiveness. And Jeannie accompanied Ari Rain in here with me and informed me there's a caller, so let's say hello to our caller.
And I'm not sure, but I don't think that her hand's been up since Dr. Tim, but we'll see. It's 541. I think it's Julie. You're on the air.
Hey.
Hi.
There, Miss Julie.
It is. Hi there.
Hey, welcome.
Well, yeah, I loved everything that you were saying. It helped really integrate a lot of what you were saying yesterday. So I guess I just had something to say earlier on that this whole goal thing is really integrating more in me. It's so related to so much. And anyway, the thing that I think after doing so many worksheets and studying so much in your intensives and all the information you give us, I'm starting to be able to see when I'm upset or in overwhelm, which are my two main issues. Overwhelm's the biggest one. I'm starting to see that there must be too many goals and I need to cancel them. And so, okay, that's good. And then what I didn't look at further was, so how come I'm not canceling them, you know, because I was stuck in them kind of like the democratic process of which one's the best one to vote for. You know, I couldn't get it all prioritized very well. And so then today now I was looking at the energy of, well, where does that come from that I can't sort things out, which is really a new layer for me to look at. I usually am able to back to this feels like a power person dynamic. And so then I start looking to my mother or father to not blame, but see where did I get the pattern from in their dynamics. And I also want to acknowledge at this moment that sometimes I tend to blame my current partner. Sometimes, often, that's my first one of my go-tos. It's, oh, well, he made me do that.
That's a tradition.
You know, so,
Julie, that's a tradition in the whole American culture.
I know. It's still in me, you know. But then when I observe that, I'm trying to do that. And I know that that's not true. I at least set it aside and stop putting energy into it. But, you know, there's just been this little barrier where I don't look further. And so So what I'm saying is that what a new piece that I got yesterday from our discussion of perfect love is that, you know, in a way I'm doing okay until I get to the worksheet or I'm willing to really look for this new root that is coming up or this new aspect of the root, that if I set my filters in my mind, and I set my mind in Rachma and perfect love, and regardless of my issue, it shifts me away from spiraling down into the patterns and habits and blames and denials and everything, all of that, and staying stuck there. And I used to stay stuck for 4 days because of my punishment that happened as a child, which I hate to keep bringing up as a story. It is actually diminishing. It's going away, and I'm accomplishing much more in my life instead of staying stuck for 4 days when I was punished and sent to my room. And
that's the benefit of doing your work.
Yeah, and for the audience's sake, you know, that was a form of punishment that I received rather than something violent like spankings and belts and things like that. But there was a lot of energy, you know, critical energy, criticism. But I would go into my room at a young age. I was probably in my 8, 9, 10-year-old stage. And I have a creative mind. I have God-given intelligence. I have lots of energy as a kid. So I would rearrange my furniture, reorganize my closet, you know, do a whole lot of sorting out. But it was still in the cloak of punishment. And so I'm starting to lift this energy of having to be punished before I accomplish anything. And that is the first time I've ever even said that. So I just keep trusting what you say about this Aramaic forgiveness and the canceling of goals, no matter what they are or what they look like, and then knowing that I'm willing with love present, conscious active presence of love, and I've done enough work to love myself at this point in life, thankfully, and so I give myself that space to look further at where the pain is and where it came from, and it's just getting so much easier to really let go of the pain part, knowing that it's just going to spiral into more evidential mind dynamics to prove that it's true and that I might as well give up because that's just who I am and the way I do things and I'll never get anywhere and, you know, those things. And I just switch into love, genuine love that I've cultivated in myself also, more so. Now, I believe, than the other spiraling downward. And so I'm now seeing that it's okay to just come out of it, let it just go or be less of an influence than the negative awareness that I've come upon. And as I hold that awareness in my love's presence awareness, it actually begins to dissolve consciously. I'm not just in denial. It's conscious dissolving of what doesn't belong in me as a true human being. And I know that that's an okay place to operate from. Why not be a true human being? You know?
It doesn't get better than that.
Yeah, so. And
for sure.
Then I have that to give to people wherever I am and whoever's with me or in the moment rather than some painful projection that I can't wait to find a victim to project it onto. It doesn't matter who it is. So this is really a life-changing integration for me right now, and I just appreciate your support in these radio shows and all the continual teaching you do because you and Jeannie and you and Aria Rain. You know, it's just, and all of our people that are studying together, we really support each other and we really do evolve back to who we are designed to be. And I'm looking forward to all of that expressing in my body more and more too, releasing the disease energies that I've stored there so as to cope with and avoid the pain. So, you know, I just encourage people to really listen to the observer listener inside them who's hearing this show as regularly as possible and know that there's real nourishment in this work and just let yourself keep listening until your brain cells start to build a rapport with the teachings that you will see is not just a belief system. It's more like a life preserver that gets thrown to you in a stormy sea, and it always pulls you back to safety and restores its true self. And that's my speech. Okay, I'm done. Thank you.
There you go. Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the pieces of information that I would offer at this stage, you know, just listening mm-hmm. to your speech, is, you know, when I say that, I mean your regulatory speech, is
okay.
that automatic thing of finding someone else to blame it on. Have you mm-hmm. done, or I would suggest it would be an ongoing process that you would do ongoing worksheets around your power person, figuring out how to blame you and make whatever was going on inside of them your fault.
Oh, that's really,
so that would be the next level of cleaning that up.
Yeah. Oh, and I never give my self permission to blame them or see that. Yeah, I had to uphold them no matter what. Thank you for, wow. Yeah, because then
that's a big
piece
of the puzzle.
How I cope. Yeah, if I don't have to worry about their blame and I see it lovingly for what it is, I now can let go of how I used to cope with it, like the overwhelm, or that wouldn't have been coping, but that was the effect of, you know, me not understanding.
No,
it.
You probably spoke correctly. You probably, one of your coping mechanisms was probably overwhelm.
Oh, okay.
I think you're probably identifying that correctly. And so as you do worksheets on overwhelm, then you can let go of that as a habit. You know, remembering that last night in the Mind Shifters and Still Point Reading session, that was part of your, you know, initial conversation with the overwhelm we were in with all this stuff going on with moving and such.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's a response that maybe got you off the hook or what have you, it maybe is an habitual response, but it will never really serve you. So again, that might be another arena in which to apply the forgiveness tool and remove your mind's capacity to produce overwhelm.
Yeah, and that whole thing you said today too about how the mind will never give me the truth unless I ask for it. So, yes,
actually,
will be asking
actually
for
it goes
it.
Further. Yeah, it goes uh-huh. further than just asking for it. You have
okay.
to set the internal mechanism so it's capable of giving it to you.
Okay.
It isn't just a matter of asking. Asking is one aspect. But if the mechanism is set to block truth, you can ask till the cows come home. Your mind's not going to show you the truth.
Mm-hmm.
That's why
true.
When they said to Yeshua, you know, in essence, we could hear people saying, Yeshua, what's most important if you're going to have a properly functioning mind and function as a human being? And he says, not love God, love neighbor as yourself, but he says, have rachma when you think of the creator, when you think of neighbor, and when you think of self. And it finishes up by saying, and this is how you maintain self. This is how you maintain your human life. And rachma, we don't even have a concept for it in the English language. We don't have a word. Is a filter in the frontal lobes of the brain that keeps intentions on track with love and is the gateway for love, for human life, to enter our human forms. And if we don't know about that and if we don't have that available, it's hopeless. And again, you can ask forever, but if the mind is set to block truth from coming through, your mind's not going to be able to give you the evidence that you need. So knowing something about how the mind operates, you know, you can say to the car, you know, let's say you go out and you buy a new car and the company has throttled the car's speed at 60 miles an hour. So you're driving along the highway and you say, car, I want you to go 70. Car, I want you to go 70. Car, I want you to go 70. Car, go 70. Car's not going to go 70 until you reset the throttle, so it'll go to 70. It's the same thing. Mm-hmm. If you don't know how the internal mechanism of the mind works and you don't set it so it will produce the result you're looking for, then asking it to do it's kind of like, how does it happen? So you've got to, again, it's building the brain cells for how the mind operates. And, you know, that response that he gave, that the Greeks said, that what he, the Greeks tell us, he said, love God, love neighbor as yourself, is a total, complete fraud and will not serve the purpose of getting your mind to proper function in any way, shape, or form. I mean, the technology of the mind that he understood 2,000 years ago is monumental. But you've got to hear the words to the brain cells that he was speaking them from. Elsewise, it doesn't make sense. You know, he said it, you know, you've got to have the eyes to see and the ears to hear. In essence, he was saying, you've got to have the brain cells before your mind can produce that result.
Wow. And the message of the church is, you know, just pray and God's on our side and wait for the Savior. And, you know, waiting is not the same as learning what he was teaching.
And if we had a clue what prayer meant, we'd have another leg up on the process. And prayer has got nothing whatsoever to do with putting our order into the cosmic gift catalog and telling the Creator what the Creator should be doing with this day today, according to our plan.
Mm-hmm.
Prayer, in Aramaic, means to set, you know, quite literally translated, means to set a trap for God, which sounds kind of strange in this culture, but really means to align and orient yourself so that you fulfill your purpose as a human being, which is to capture the active presence of love and reflect it into the world, the same way as your TV antenna is designed to capture channel 2 and show it to you through your television set. If the antenna is turned backward, you know, or let's say here we are in Bristol, Virginia, and somebody comes down here from Buffalo, New York, and they bring a TV antenna from Buffalo, and they're not going to get very many stations around here, and it's not going to work very well because the shape of the antenna for the frequencies that are used in Buffalo, New York are different than the ones in Bristol, Virginia. And if you look at what they call the Lord's Prayer, it's not a prayer at all. It's actually a set of instructions, and you can go to our YouTube channel. There's a video called Living, Not Saying, the Lord's Prayer. It's not a prayer at all. It's a set of instructions for how to align and orient yourself so that you capture the energy of love and pour it out into the world. That's what we as human beings are designed for. And that's what prayer means. It's got nothing to do with, okay, God, here's your order for today. Do this, 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 and this. It's just not what the word means.
So is that setting of the antenna the same, symbolically speaking, as setting a condition of rachma in our mind?
That would be a part of capturing and bringing active love and reflecting it into the world would be enhanced by rachma, yes.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a part of it.
What is the law that was the one that says when thinking of God, self, or neighbor, first set a condition of rachma? Is that the first law or the second law?
Yeah, that was the first law, is to have a rachma, not love, but to have a rachma when you think of the Creator, when you think of neighbor, and by so doing, you maintain self. If you keep the gateway open that brings your human life, love, into your form, you maintain that by keeping that gateway open. If you close it, you just lost your human life. You lost contact with it.
So
when I recognize that human life is love, and I allow that to flow through me, and I understand that there's a gateway that either inhibits it or opens it, then I keep the gateway open. But there's not even any such an idea in the English language. There isn't words to describe what that means. It's represented by a single simple word in Aramaic, rachma.
And neighbor means everything else other than God or self,
no.
Right?
No.
No?
Oh. No. No. Neighbor means, in Aramaic, anybody that you think about.
Oh.
So if I'm, you know, not thinking about someone in some location somewhere in the world, they're not my neighbor. But the minute that I say, oh, you know, the Russian peasant in the field, that Russian peasant is now my neighbor. The word, you know, generally speaking, we live in a culture that thinks of my neighbor as somebody who's physically near to me, but it's actually a mental word, and it means anyone who's mentally near to you. If you think about them, they're your neighbor. Even if they're on the other side of the world.
Yeah. Okay. So, so if I want to, let's say, send some healing thoughts to somebody far away. So I first set a condition in myself to be receptive for the presence of God in me.
You got it.
So that, and then I just simply think my highest and best thoughts, which are what initiated my desire to do so in the first place. So I know I can trust my thoughts, and they just come to me. And I feel really, when I do this, I feel very connected to Source and God and the beingness of God and the beingness of the oneness. And I send my thoughts or my being with those thoughts to a person whom I care about and want the best for them, the highest good. And I don't label it. I might say, please help them get well from their illness or something like that, but that reminds me of how I used to
say. But what if it's time for them to die?
Yeah.
What if it's time for them to die? It's interesting.
True.
Back several years ago, I keynoted a healing symposium at Unity Village. And one of the other speakers there was a medical doctor named Larry Dossey. And Larry doing research on prayer. Now, his concept of prayer was, you know, putting your order in the cosmic gift catalog. But they did some controlled research, and they found that there was clinical evidence of a change in people's condition when someone was extending love to them. And what they found was, as opposed to, you know, you need to heal this person, what they found was that clinically, the most profound positive shifts happened for people when the thought system was one of just the highest and best, rather than trying to direct it, well, you should fix this, you know, they've got a cold, you should fix their lungs. It was like, no, what they found, and he wrote a book, and I'm not remembering what the name of the book is, but if you look up Larry, Dossey, he's done this research on prayer, and what they found was that clinically the most powerful impact was when it was sent without specificity, but rather just a general sending energy of support for the highest and best to this person. That's when they got the clinical results.
Oh, wow. That's so much easier. That's like what I do anyway when I'm doing a piano concert. I say to myself, I set a condition so that I'm not afraid or anything, you know. I just say, help me to bring forth as much Christ consciousness as I am able to receive at this time. And then I just can let go and let it be, everything be okay. It's for the highest good, and it'll resonate the way it's meant to resonate. Yeah.
Nice. Cool.
Yeah, that's cool.
All right, well, we're down to the less than the last minute. So thank you for the conversations and the questions, and I thought that was a good session last night for the Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing support group. So we'll look forward to the next session in a month. So have a blessed one.
And tomorrow's show is going to be the Aramaicisms Part 4 that was missed back in August. I have to take Dad to a doctor's appointment, and Michael will have Aria on his own, so we're going to do a pre-recording tomorrow. So we hope that you enjoy it. That one got missed the last time, so enjoy.